Let me just tell you, members, a little bit about the process and what is going on here. These are the lottery dollars that Minnesota has. It's 40% of the money that goes into the trust fund. And this year, we are spending $26 million in this bill. And the process has been long and involved, and you will see in your packet, I won't go over the dates of what has happened, but you will see how involved this process is. But I want to call your attention to just a couple of things. There's a citizens and legislative committee that looks over the proposals. This year, we had 240 proposals. Requesting $168 million. We chose the top 85, which meant that we had days and days of hearings because we gave each a half an hour. So we were able to get through each proposal in depth, or to each proposal in depth. Of these, 48 were chosen. And those are the 48 that are in our bill. And before I go over the bill, I want you to just look at the sheet that we've handed out, just because I don't have to go over the numbers and I won't read them to you. But I just want you to look at the priority areas and the amount in each priority area. So you'll see we did a request for proposal. We wanted to make these more targeted to certain areas, and so each of these proposals that was adapted was responsive to one or the other of the categories in the request for proposals. So you can see the amount recommended in each category and the number. We have a top drawer staff at LCCMR. And I'm going to just don't say anything because I haven't introduced them, but I want to tell you that I'm going to invite you all to visit with them when you get a chance, particularly if you have a natural resource question. They have a depth of information that you don't find often. And their office is just right over here downstairs. Now, you may leave me. But we just have a top quality staff, and I just think you all ought to get to know them a little bit better. Part of what LCCMR staff does is take the science proposals that the committee chooses and has scientists across the nation peer review them. This is an unusual and, I think, a very strong process. And for that, I would like for Michael McDonough to... I think you all know Susan Thornton, who's with us this morning, who's the director. But for a few minutes, I would just like Michael McDonough, who does the peer review process, to tell you a little bit about the process, to show you what kind of quality science we are attracting in this bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. On the back of your packet, there's a sheet that does sort of an overview. What we do for peer review is there's a part of the statute, 116P, requires peer review for all research proposals. There's a listing of the proposals we go through and determine which need peer review. This year, there are 17 research proposals. 14 of those went through the peer review process that we conduct. One was partially funded by the National Science Foundation, so we went with their peer review on that one. One was funded by the USGS. They have an internal peer review. That's excellent, so we're going with that one on that one. On the back of the page, you will see 28 people that I was able to convince to help us out in the peer review. We offer them the per diem that we offer our members, which is not very much money, and actually only four of them took it, because if they work for a federal agency or state agency, they're not allowed to do it. As you can see, we were able to get people from all over the country. For example, we had the Gobi proposal, and we got the expert in Canada out of Windsor and the expert in Michigan State in the United States. So I was able to get people from all over the country to give comments. People prepare a research addendum, which are from 10 to 50 pages. The peer reviewers fill out questionnaires and provide some comments, and then we provide those to the researchers. They respond to each of the questions and adjust their research addendums accordingly. And we post all that on, we post the revised addendums on the website.
Thank you, Mr. McDonough.
Any questions? Thank you. Right now, what I'm going to do is go over House File 2624, and Ms. Thornton, I know, is going to help me with this. This is a detailed bill, but I do want you to understand what's in it. And instead of my going totally through it and then backtracking, if you have questions along the way, I think it'd be easier if you ask them along the way. So I'm going to start with page two, and we're looking now at the category of basic data that this state needs to manage its natural resources. And I think in this committee we have discussed the county geological atlases, and so committee members are familiar with that because we have appropriated money from the clean water money to this, but this is to continue to accelerate the atlases so that we know about what's going on in our groundwaters. In addition to adding Sherburne County, which is what this proposal does, either Morrison or Isanti County will be an additional one. That just hasn't been chosen by them yet, as far as I know. They're also, with this money, looking at the St. Lawrence Formation in southeast Minnesota to see how it works. And they're going to be doing some trace flow and recharge work. So that's on page two, and we start on 229 with the second one, updating the Minnesota Wetlands Inventory. This is the second phase. You know, our wetlands inventory is now out of date, and some of it wasn't well done in the first place. So that's on page 3.3. There is a Minnesota Breeding Bird Atlas appropriation. This is going to be done on a township level, which is impressive. It will be a statewide Minnesota breeding bird distribution. There will be a book, but all the information will be available online, and it will be free. You will see, I'm not going to repeat that online and free, but we are trying to get this information for the public and viewable. So know that that's just part of what we're up to here. Okay, and 3.17 is an integrated operational bird plant conservation plan for Minnesota. This is going to target specific bird populations and implementing conservation programs for specific populations. 3.27, we're looking at mitigating pollinator decline in Minnesota, and specifically what will be looked at is the amount of insecticides on flowers and in pollen to determine if it's contributing to bee decline. And I think we're all aware of the bee decline issue. On 4.1, this is in the science and innovation from the Sudan underground mine, and this is there's a salty brine under the mine that bubbles up without oxygen, and it's going to, this proposal is investigating the unique microbes that have been discovered there. And this is one of the ones that obviously was peer reviewed, and the peer reviewers, I will tell you, were excited about this particular proposal. On 4.12, we're quantifying carbon burial in wetlands, and this is, gives us obviously potential for carbon credits by restoring or managing wetlands. I mean, we know a lot of the benefits of wetlands. This is the benefit that needs quantifying. 4.21, this is my personal favorite members, and I maybe shouldn't tell you this, but this is identifying locations that are suitable for restoring wetlands, buffer strips, and perennial vegetation to manage excess flows from contaminants from artificial watersheds, and separating artificial watersheds and natural watersheds. This is Dr. David Muller from the University of Minnesota, and those of you who do agriculture are probably very familiar with him. But he has introduced to us, or to me at least, and to the LCCMR, the phrase precision conservation. You all know about precision agriculture. We are very close to being able to doing precision conservation, and this will take us a big step closer to that. There is a, the next proposal is in the Chippewa River watershed, and it is targeting sensitive fields for change practices and markets in that area that might support those change practices. In 5.8, where this money is for the Farmers Legal Action Group to assess the implementation of applicable laws for preserving agricultural land. In 5.17, I think you probably read the article in the Scrib about moose, and this is for trying to identify the best management practices because of the decline in moose populations. 5.3 is to the University of Minnesota in cooperation. This was a project that was specifically asked for by the LCCMR to get our state agencies in the U to work together for developing courses in restoration and bringing the most current practices to Minnesota professionals in this area. And so that's one of the things we'll discuss if you'd like. 6.6 is giving money. This is for purchasing SNAs. DNR has a long list of SNAs, and if you look at the list, they need $68 million just to cover what to make a dent, and this just makes a dent in the list. But this is also money to help private folks restore parts of their native prairie. So it's a kind of a two-part proposal.
Representative Wiginius, I see we have one question. Do you want to do questions as they come, or do you want to? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was going to be my question. I have a couple of the projects that are in my amendment, and I'm wondering if I could ask about them as we go.
Sure.
One of them is around the University of Minnesota, this program. When they brought that forward to set up this extension class, did anybody ask them about what the current programs are at either the University of Minnesota on the main campus, or Crookston has degrees in natural resources and horticulture, or University of Wisconsin, River Falls, or Dakota County Vote Tech, Hennepin County, Rochester Technical College, all currently offer classes in this area. And I was surprised that we're going to spend $550,000 for them to offer a class that I would say clearly is within the mission of all these schools already.
Representative Gina.
Well, let's start out first by saying that it was the LCCMR that did a request for proposal in this very specific area, asking for this. Not everybody who's out there doing restorations has a college degree in restorations. And I don't think we would expect that. This is for them to develop courses, but also to disseminate the information as widely as possible and to keep people up to date on what is going on in the area. Each of our state agencies who works in this is participating in this. It's MnDOT, Bowser, and DNR all have groups. They contract out for, they do restoration, they contract out for restoration. They felt the strong need to have additional training, and this this particular project met the criteria that we had set out. Perhaps we do have, I will put out, if, because I appreciate that Representative McNamara had told me that he was thinking about offering an amendment and in a couple of areas, and so one of the things was in this area, so one of the things I'd like to hand out is what was handed out at and I think the thing we need to think about is, I hope there are not a lot of mistakes, but we know there are mistakes out there in restoration, and mistakes are expensive. So that, so you can see that in this, she has, this is Susan Gladowich, who is the project manager for this. She has listed a couple of the problems that we run into on this sheet of paper. Incorrect seed installation, inadequate site preparation, so you get weed invasion, poor species selection. So the courses would specifically, and I can read you the list of courses, members, if you would like. Would you like me to read the list of courses? No? Oh. All right, but this will be helpful to you, I think. Any other questions?
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, if there is a need for this, Representative Wagenius, I would hope, and I don't see any mention, and I did look over it all. I see no mention of collaborating with the industry. There's no mention of the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, which already has a certified program of working with them, the people that are actually doing the work. There's no mention in the brochure about MnDOT and their certified landscape specialist program already dealing with this issue. You mentioned that they're going to be consultant. I sure hope they are, because they're the largest installer of this kind of work being done on public property, and it absolutely should be done. With some of the ideas here, it looks to me like we want to give the University of Minnesota $550,000 that I would say is something they already should be doing, or they are already being done. And so I've got concern as we go forward. I hope we're collaborating with these people, and I don't see that. The other thing in it, it's troubling. One of the items they're doing, members, is they're buying 5 seed drills. Why are they buying 5 seed drills? So we can have more public sector people doing what the private sector's doing?
Let's back up and say this is, MnDOT was part of the collaboration to get this going, as was DNR and Bowser. So they are collaborating, I mean, even to put the project, present the project to us. They intend to collaborate with private industry, so I don't think that is a shortfall. That is an intention. And I think that is in the work program, though I would have to go, I didn't know that was your particular question, and I have to sit down here and read the work program for that. But maybe we could ask staff if they could help us while we're going on. Any other questions about this one?
Seeing none, please proceed.
Okay. Let me find out where I was. Okay. Okay. All right. We're now on 6.28. This is $2.2 million for State Park land acquisition, 9 acres in Crow Wing State Park, which is on, it's going to be land, two parcels on the river, 160 acres at Scenic State Park, 55 acres at Teddy Gooch, 19 at Split Rock, and 100 at William O'Brien. That is what you're getting for your money.
Representative Wiginia, Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wiginia, is on the both this one and the scientific and natural areas. So the state park one is in holdings, and some of these tracks are, the dollars are not enough to do the outright in holdings. So that's why there's the bonding bill. So there's, it requires both because there's not enough funds here to do those in holdings.
Representative Wiginia.
Correct. William O'Brien, for example, falls in that area. Split Rock, I think Split Rock is a different parcel than in the bonding bill. But it's right, one of them's down and one of them's up.
And then,
Representative.
Isn't that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginia, on the SNAs, how are those SNAs picked? Are they, are these like the ones with endangered species? Or are they the rarest ones that, I mean, is there a list of SNAs that's available or that DNR is prioritized? Or?
DNR does have a list, and that's a good idea. I will get that list out to this committee and ask that staff put it in your packet for next time. They have a long list of a specifically targeted, identified parcels with how many acres and a total cost listed of $68 million. It's probably the place where we're the furthest behind in Minnesota. Not probably. I don't know any place else we're further behind in land acquisition. So we'll get that in your packet for next time.
Representative Torkelson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wiginius, we've heard a lot of testimony recently about the impact of land acquisitions on local units of government and the need for the burden that land acquisitions put on the state of Minnesota to maintain these properties in the future. And are there any provisions in these acquisition proposals to properly fund the cost of owning land and to properly compensate local government for the effects of land acquisition on their individual budgets?
There is not in this proposal. You're correct about that. For the land acquisitions for the rare endangered species, those are usually pretty small parcels. We're not talking about the hundreds of acres parcels. We're talking about 5-acre parcels and smaller, or maybe larger, but we're talking about smaller parcels.
A follow-up.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wiginius. As the state acquires more and more property, we also acquire more and more responsibility. And I think it's only proper that we consider how to address the ongoing costs of the state-owned properties, and I don't see any evidence here that that is being done, and I am somewhat alarmed by that.
Mm-hmm. Representative Wiginia.
Representative Torkelson, I could have made that same speech. I agree with you. I think that's a problem that this committee has really got to wrestle with. So I agree with you. In fact, I have a bill that has that in it, so we will have a chance to visit that that issue.
Please proceed.
In fact, we passed that bill through this committee. It sits in Mary Murphy's committee. Thank you. The next 7.75, this is not for outright acquisition, but this is for easements of rare granite outcrop ecosystems. This is along the Minnesota River in southwest Minnesota. It's a unique landscape that features plant and animal communities that are rare. These are high-quality sites that Bowser staff did a ranking of sites and picked out only the highest quality ones. 7.16 is for the Minnesota Habitat Conservation Partnership. It's a supplement to them of $1.4 million.
Representative Wiginius, I have a question. Representative McNamara has a question. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wiginius, on the rock outcroppings, that's one that's also part of my amendment. I'm trying to understand. We funded this for in excess, I believe, of $2 million already to purchase these rare rock outcroppings. so that we can preserve them and be able to see them in the future. And in the reality, what we're doing here, if I understand it, and I think it's a good idea to preserve some of them, and we've preserved a number of them already. And this proposal, if I'm not mistaken, is now to buy the easements for the neighborhood at $2,500 an acre for the projects that weren't at the top of the list. We've already funded those. We're going to go down lower on the list now and fund those projects. And I'm trying to understand it. So the goal of the project is to stop aggregate mining on these properties. That's what the goal is. We don't want these rocks mined. And I'm trying to understand, did you have testimony in LCCMR of what this was going to cost the local units of government, or what were their feelings about having less of the potential for the resource of the rock? And then I think, more importantly, I guess, one, did you hear that?
Soil and Water Conservation District that actually brought us this proposal. And it's different from the one before because it was additional county. So it's not going down on the list. It was an additional county. So they had a list. They ranked them, and we only funded the top of the list.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Or we're only recommending funding of the top of the list.
Okay, they're on the top of the list now because they weren't on the list before.
But it's my understanding it's because nobody had, it was a different county than before.
Okay.
Ms. Thornton can help me out on this.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative McNamara, Susan Thornton with the LCCMR staff. Yes, they came in, it was an initial, we have funded it, the commission has recommended funding, the legislature has passed that funding in the past. This is an expansion of the counties participating in where these granite rock outcroppings are. And they testified, the SWCD staff did testify before the commission and really gave talked us through very carefully their ranking of these, what they had before us. And it is a very specific list that has gone through a very thorough scientific ranking process. So these are the highest of the high.
Well, I realize that, but I'm just going to quote from the from your handout. The 2010 grant will provide for funding for the next 12 highest priority applications. I realize they also come from two new counties. Most of the projects are in the existing counties that already have been funded. But they are the ones that didn't make the grade previous to that. That's what this says. Maybe it's not true.
Ms. Clark.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative McNamara, that wasn't the intent of that sentence, I don't believe. It was very high ranking, and you go down the list of very high ranking, you have a cutoff when your dollars end. These are to provide additional dollars to those continued very high ranking granite rock outcroppings.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I could continue. Did anybody talk about how probable is it that these rocks would be mined? We're paying $2,500 an acre for all this land in this area. And what's the probability that the local governments would allow them to be mined? So we're paying $2,500. Are they in areas that wouldn't even be eligible for a mining permit? Do we know that?
Representative Gagne, Ms. Thornton.
I don't know the answer. We were more talking about, and we did visit down there, we were more talking about the rare and endangered species that are both listed federally and state. Then we were talking about the mining. Some of it may be attractive to mining, but there was, I don't recall any testimony about zoning where the locals said that these were zoned for mining.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I was curious to know that. I'd hate to think that we're paying $2,500 an acre to not have somebody mine something that's not even eligible to be mined. My next question is, do you know in the scoring process they used a point, how much was given, waited for the donation back from the landowner? All the other conservation programs I'm aware of, if you sign up for an easement, you have the potential to donate back. Do you know how the scoring was for the landowners donated back? Or do they not donate any part of the value of the easement back?
Representative Wagenius. Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative McNamara. I do not, I will find out the answer to that question for you. Our discussion with the proposers, with the SWCDs in front of us, really related to the ecological ranking of these lands as potential to put a conservation easement on them, the unique wetlands that exist on these granite rock outcroppings, and the so the protection also for water quality and those rare species that were there. There have been pressures on these granite rock outcroppings, and my understanding is it's a very surficial mining that takes place and it comes in. And this was something that was identified by the SWCDs as a need in their area for protection of these lands.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Thornton, on the easement, are the rights that are purchased, are those development rights as well as mining rights? Or what are the rights that are purchased? Is it protecting by not having housing built there or agriculture? What are the rights within the easement?
Ms. Thornton.
Chair, Representative Hanson, members, these are, they're the, oh, I want to call, they're not standard Bowser easements, they're held by Bowser in that same way of protection, and yes, so it would be protected from, there'd be development rights, but they do not fit the regular RIM program. That's one of the reasons this was brought to the LCCMR for consideration for protection through an easement program, is they don't fit the criteria of the RIM program, but yet they are this unique geologic and plant community that they were suggesting be protected.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Thornton, so the purchase is for some rights, but it's not fee title. So the ownership remains in private hands, and there's still property taxes paid by the owner. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanson, that is correct. Thank you. I wasn't understanding the question. Also, in this appropriation, there are some dollars slated for restoration needs as they look at the easement and some possible restoration needs to further enhance and protect these granite rock outcroppings.
Please proceed, Dewitt. We're going to have to move here.
Okay. I know about 7.18. This is for the Outstate Habitat Conservation Partnership. It's supplemental money to restore or protect 3,900 acres. 11 groups will be participating in this share, and they are committing $2.4 million. There is a supplemental appropriation on 8.29 for the metro area. I won't go through all the lands on that, but it's a bit much time. 10.3. This is conserving sensitive and priority shorelines in Cass County. They have 38% of their shoreline on 500 lakes are largely undeveloped and have high conservation value. We're just helping them out there. To Nature Conservancy on 10.16. Money to develop prairie-based economics so there is sustainable income from prairie restoration at the bottom of the page. We're now moving into waters. And so you will see a number of science, these are going to be all science proposals. The first one is to working on endocrine disruptors and characterizing the sources of the endocrine disruptors. They're used in the Zumbro watershed because each of the sub-watersheds in the Zumbro has a different dominant use. 11.6, this is looking at old sulfide mining residues. Some of them are emitting sulfates going into sulfites, I think is the way it goes, and emitting mercury. And so I'm looking at a way to see if we can stop that from happening. Looking at the impacts of effluent in surface water, and looking at what's happening to our fish. So we better know how to handle our wastewater so it doesn't impact our fish. 11.28 is an interesting in Mapleton, Minnesota. Folks have gotten together in the farm community, Blue Earth Drainage Authority, and they have a project to reduce soil erosion, peak water flows, nutrient loading, and through a demonstration model. And 12.5 is looking at septic discharges into lakes and looking at the impact on our fish from septic discharges into lakes. 12.22 is looking at dioxins in lake sediment, again figuring out where we know they accumulate in fish, where do they come from, can we slow that down. 12.28 is a study of 150 lakes in 5 regions, these are shallow lakes, to see what works best for lake restoration. 13.3, we're looking at management practices to protect the near shoreline habitats. 13.15, looking at trout streams, what climate change is doing to the bugs that trout like to eat, so we can make sure we protect our trout fishing. 13.29 is looking at controlling buckthorn and garlic mustard with biological controls. 14.4 is looking at, we did a specific request for proposal of emerald ash borer, and you came back and said we have 1 million acres of black ash and they're very vulnerable, and so they designed a study to help us understand what can happen to black ash, this 1 million acres, and what might be done to mitigate. 14.16 is looking at how and does the health of a forest, is it very healthy, can it resist invasive species? We all know about invasive species. You've heard a little bit about the round goby, and looking at an invasive again, 14.24.
Representative Wagenius, question here from Representative Anders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, looking at the healthy forest to resist invasion, what exactly are we talking about there? What species are we looking at?
I think I heard your question. This is one of the premier scientists in forestry in the state of Minnesota. He is assessing the role of forest health management, how we manage forests to see how they will resist invasive species. He's looking at 80 different sites, and he's looking at them because of the possibility, what climate change may do to them, and can the push of climate change be resisted by having really good management of the forest?
So it's not dealing with invasive species, it's more about the climate change piece of it then?
Well, I think it's really looking more at if you have a really healthy, if you manage for a healthy forest, can that forest resist climate change?
Okay, thank you.
Representative Knuth has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment on the science of this. I think when we keep our ecosystems healthy, they resist all kinds of invasions. You can get one or two in there, but they can keep them out. And I think it's a lot cheaper way and a lot smarter way long term than to kind of pick up on the back end and try to fix it once it's already invaded. And so I think it's a smart place to be investing a little bit of money.
Briefly, if I may, we're getting some feedback on the mic system here. Everybody turn their phones off, if you would. Members and audience, please. Thank you.
On 15.1, we've talked in this committee and had testimony about algae and how it can be made into produce biofuels, and this is just continuing with that a pilot scale model for that process that we've already talked about. 15.1.1 is looking at comparing four crops: switchgrass, miscanthus, diverse prairie, and a highly diverse prairie, and looking at the impacts of fertilization, a lot of water. Do they help to what is the product we are getting? And does it, what is it that we can do best to help with climate change and also store carbon? Because we know that these crops are going to be for carbon stores. Okay, 15.23, this is restoring high-quality native habitats and then using the stuff we take off the lands for bioenergy sources. 15.33 is demonstrating sustainable energy practices at our residential environmental learning centers. 16.16 is life cycle analysis of low carbon energy technologies.
Representative Guinness, we have a question from Representative Anderson.
Representative Wagenius, could you review the demonstrating sustainable energy practices at residential environmental learning centers? What does that all include? Is that meaning that they're going to be purchasing different things? Is it just a small display? What are we talking about exactly?
I think I heard the question. It's energy efficiency, energy conservation, and then teaching kids about what they have done.
So at Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, so will they be doing examples on their own buildings, maybe doing sun panels, things of that nature?
Own building.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Please proceed.
Okay. I'm now at the bottom of 16.24. This is apprenticeships to the Soil and Water Conservation Districts. And so we now have now shifted into the last category, which is learning. Opportunities for learning, and so I should have told her I could shift it. And then there's some adventure learning with the Will Steger Foundation on 17.1.1.
Mr. Chair.
DNR project on 17.1.4.
Representative Guinness. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, on the Minnesota Conservation Apprentice Academy, I know we had a bill last year that was similar in nature of paying students kind of a stipend. Is this similar to that?
Yeah, I'm going to have to help you out here with this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm maybe not connecting on the bill that you're thinking of. The goal of this recommendation is it's an initiative brought to us by the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and what they are finding is they have a lot of talented professionals out in the field right now who are probably going to be reaching retirement age soon. And this is to assist in the development of what is called a mentoring program so that we can start taking and we can take advantage of that knowledge and that capacity out in the field right now and working with, in particular with the Minnesota Conservation Corps students and mentoring those students and other students so we can train that next generation of natural resource professionals.
Okay, so thank you, Mr. Chair. So was this kind of similar to like a paid internship is what we'd be doing then?
Representative Anderson, yes.
Okay, thank you.
If I may, Representative Knuth, you've learned some input on this. Was your bill that they're talking about?
Mr. Chair, and not to slow it down, but the bill last year was for Minnesota Naturalists with the Conservation Corps and the DNR, more in parks and education type programs. I think this is more of actually on the ground conservation that the board or restoration that the Board of Water and Soil Resources is doing. They're different agencies, I think slightly different aims, but a similar type program.
Representative Hanson.
I have a technical correction. I think that the Minnesota Conservation Corps has changed their name, and so we probably need to have a correct. It's Conservation Corps of Minnesota or Conservation, whatever it is. We probably need to make sure we have the correct name in the bill. Maybe Mr. Price, when we get to that point, we could do an oral amendment just to make sure we have the correct name in the bill.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wiginius, for the money that's in here, I am assuming some of that is to pay the outgoing staff that are retiring soon, to pay them some money, and then also to pay those folks that are participating in the program. So how many people are we, what are we talking about numbers-wise?
Ms. Thornton. Representative Wiginius.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson and members, the current staff are already paid, so this becomes a new part of their job. I think a desired part of their job. We are looking at 30 apprentice. Well, I'm looking at the work program. We have work programs for all of these that are also posted online. If you want more detail, I can provide you that. 30 each year is what's proposed. Apprentices is what they're being called. In their work program.
Please proceed.
All right, we're now at on 17.22. This is money for the what's called the Wilderness Inquiry, and this provides outdoor education and recreation along the Mississippi River. 17.32, this is money going to St. Paul for ecological education and historical interpretation at Como Regional Park. On 18.9, we are doing some expanding outdoor classrooms. We have them now, and that's an expansion of outdoor school course, the Prairie Classroom Network. 18.16 is to integrate outdoor education into our current school curriculum. 18.24 is a project called Get Outdoors Minnesota for connecting kids with local nature experiences. 18.32 is with money to the Association for the Advancement of Hmong Women to provide environmental information and teaching skills as a gateway to fishing, actually. And one of the things we asked them to do would help inform people about how much fish they could eat because of the mercury. 19.11 is to the International Wolf Center to develop interactive and on-site and distant learning about wolves.
Representative Guinness, I do have a question now. And the last, the fishing, 18.30, I just clarify, you just said that the advisories are going to be mercury-only related?
No.
No, okay.
It would be all contaminants. That's an example.
Identified, okay. Thank you. Thank you.
I think I'm on 19.24 is to the University of Minnesota State University at Mankato to develop online educational materials on the Minnesota River for schools and outreach centers. And then we get on to, the rest of the language, fortunately, members, is boilerplate. And it's the kind of language we put in any of these in this bill to move the bill forward. So, but I have now gone over each of the projects, which is what I wanted to do for you. So, it's called Minnesota Conservation Corps, Conservation Corps Minnesota is the correct name, and I would move to have that corrected in any place that shows up in this bill.
Very good.
And you just want to vote on it?
We'll note that as an amendment, and all those in favor of that amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion to carry.
Members, I'd be willing to take questions. If there are no questions, I'll renew my motion.
Representative Virginia, I have one more question. And it's regarding the, back on page 10 on 10.30, understanding source of aquatic contaminants, emerging concern. And, you know, we had talked in environment policy earlier this week regarding pharmaceuticals and the development of, I remember asking a question about the development of methods so we could actually measure. Is that what this is about? Because the companies that develop the chemicals aren't required to give us the methods to measure these chemicals, and so we're spending our taxpayer dollars to figure it out.
I think this is a broader thing. It's looking at the more of the classifications, like pharmaceuticals coming from wastewater treatment. Can you get kind of a broad marker of those to see where our contaminants are coming from? So are these contaminants coming from a wastewater treatment system? Do we need to upgrade our wastewater treatment systems? And if so, how? So it's broad markers, not to the specificity that you're talking about.
Okay, thank you. Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, do you want me to move my amendment? Are you ready for that?
If that wasn't a question, you go ahead. Yeah,
move the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A-10 amendment. I'll explain it.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The current LCCMR operates on a time frame where you have to have the proposals in by May 1st of the year before. So the proposals for these projects were due in on May 1st of 2009. And unfortunately, they do something that you have to question. They should learn from Lessard-Sams and leave some money back in case something surprise pops up. Lessard-Sams, I think, sets aside approximately about 10%, 5 to 10%, and don't spend it all right out of the chute. Unfortunately, LCCMR has got a rigid guideline, and we had a very unique thing happen last year. On about the 10th of May, emerald ash was discovered in Representative Hausman's district in St. Paul near the border of Minneapolis. Luckily, Lessard-Sams has a provision in their documents that say they can use the money to protect forests. And so we stretched that language to the limit, and I strongly supported that, and we used $2 million to protect the forest and laid out a plan to get communities and local governments ready to try and see if there's some way we can get people that live down in my district to make sure they don't move ashwood up into the black ash swamps of Representative Anzalk's district, where we have part of the 900 million ash trees in our state. My point is if you look at my amendment, it takes approximately what would be the 10%, a little less than that. And it doesn't really matter to me if it was $1 million or $2 million. LCCMR has a much very broad mission, as you've just listened to. We can use it to help people learn at Will Steger School, or we can use it to pay $2,500 an acre to not mine some land that we don't even know if it can be mined. We're not going to replant it. We're going to let it continue to be farmed the way it's been for hundreds of years. We've already protected 1,500 of those acres. I just picked two of the projects to raise questions on. I could have raised questions on any one of them. I don't know if the hard questions are being asked in LCCMR like I see them being asked in Lessard Sams. And I don't know if it's because there's a watchdog group in Lessard Sams and there's not in LCCMR, but we need people to ask hard questions there. And if they're not going to do it in LCCMR, we're going to do it here or on the House floor. I just think it's important. It's our job. It's too bad that we're not realistic in what we're doing and looking at it on a broad picture and asking some of the questions we just asked about a couple of the projects. I think it's important. This amendment is a great amendment. Many of us were in Chicago this fall, Representative Torkelson, Representative Anderson, Representative Wagenius, Representative Hansen, Representative Hortman, I'm wondering who else I missed. We're down there, Representative Hansen, and heard how we could make a difference today, right away. Removing some of the ash trees, getting them replaced, use native plant material. And I just think it's too bad that this bill does not allow for something like that to happen. And I sure hope, I don't know if the DNR is here or not, they are. There's Mr. Meyer. You better come up with a proposal by next year, Mr. Meyer, if they're not going to do anything now, because we need to react. And if the Department of Ag's not here, they should be here to help with it, because these are the kind of things that we could be doing and should be doing and asking more hard questions. I can count, Mr. Chair, so I'll withdraw the amendment.
Representative Guineas.
Thank you, Representative McNamara, for withdrawing the amendment, but I would like to respond on two things. One, I agree that emerald ash borer is a problem. So in the bonding bill, which passed finance last night, there is money, $3 million, for the same grants to counties. It's some very similar language to what you have here. And to be fair, there's also $3 million, which is the same number, for infilling or restoration in our northern forests. So we're trying to be fair across the state. So $6 million altogether for forest and to make them healthier, plus the studies in here. So I think that's one thing. So I think we're working on the problem. We're not ignoring it. But the second thing, I feel when you say that LCCMR is not asking the hard questions, I strongly beg to differ with you on that. We had almost 250 proposals, brought that down to 85, a day's of hearings with a half an hour of hearings per proposal. Then ranked them and chose 48. Then we took the science one and had them peer reviewed. I don't know any place else in state government that takes that extra step to peer review and then go back to the proposers and say, these are the comments. Can we move in this way or that way? Proposers like their proposals to be made better. So what we're offering you is something that Lessard Sands does not have. So with that,
Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe I see both DNR and Ag here, but thank you, Representative McNamara, for talking about what we did, I think, on a bipartisan level in Chicago, learning about these things. And I think it would be good, maybe if we could have a joint committee hearing with Ag Finance and hear from Ag and DNR what they've done and kind of the plan for the future beyond bonding. And if we could get that now while there's still snow on the ground, I think it would be good in getting, learning what's happened since we left last spring, what's been done, what still needs to be done, if there's any needs in terms of policy changes as well as financial needs, so we can do that. So I would encourage maybe we can get that soon.
I'd just like to say too, I'm gonna speak to you, Representative McNamara, to thank you for your concern on that. I think Representative Angelk and I probably have most of the ash trees in Minnesota in our two districts, and it is a big concern. But we are proposing to do something about it, and as you heard from Representative Virginia. So, but I appreciate your concern there. And you had a question.
Well, I just think it's important that we understand the situation. LCCMR spends every penny. Lessard Sams leaves some money back. When we got to May 15th or May 13th, whatever that day was, and Mary Murphy's committee was convened, we were able to use some money at the last minute. This is the kind of stuff that people in Minnesota are frustrated with. We have a day set, May 1st of 09. Classic example, on May 10th, we discover this pest. And what's government say? Oh, sorry, you missed the deadline by 10 days. And in 11 months, we're going to have a hearing and spend every penny, but our hands are tied. Well, we should fix it, not be spending it all. And I will say, what we're doing in my amendment that I withdrew can't be done with Lessard Sams. It allows for the... I think many of you heard the story of the woman down in Lakeville that took the gun after the tree guy, chased him out of his yard. Maybe she didn't have the $1,000 or whatever to pay to remove that tree. I don't know what the situation was. But 30 years ago, I was in that business. And believe you me, when you were cutting down somebody's big elm tree in the backyard, oftentimes what saved them was that the state of Minnesota had a program to help them. And this is the kind of common sense stuff. When people say to you, well, what's my lottery money used for? This is the kind of stuff they could relate to. And it's a stretch. We can't be using more Lessard Sams to plant boulevard trees or cut down private property ash trees. It's not allowed. And so that's my point. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Virginia.
Yes, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 2624 as amended be passed in return.
Representative Guineas has renewed her motion that House File 2624, as amended, be passed and returned to Committee on Finance. Any further questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. Silent. Bill is passed. H-2624 is amended, is passed, returned to Committee of Finance. Representative Horton.
Thank you. After the vote, I just wanted to ask a question and make a comment. My question is, after these projects go forward, do they return to the LCCMR and provide you with a report on their results? And is that information reviewed in public, like in a hearing that you could watch on the Internet or something?
Representative Guineas, or Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hartman, members, thank you for asking. Yes, there is oversight. That's one of the things that the LCCMR and the LCCMR staff provide, is there are ongoing reports that are required statutorily twice a year on the updates and progress, you know, what went right, what went wrong as it's moving forward, and then final reports. We have abstracts of all projects since 1991 posted on the web, and then we go out and do site visits. We have hopefully more informal hearings where people come in and we ask them to present the results and for discussion. And those are, you know, all public meetings. And so if there's some area that you're interested in that maybe had been provided funding or something, please, we'd be happy to talk to you. Or if there's interest in any proposal, let us know, or a presentation, let us know, please.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up.
Yeah. Rep. Portman.
It just seems like maybe next year, if I don't know if I'll still be here, but that seems like a good
precursor to the next year's proposal of briefly saying, this is what we funded last year, and this is what it did, and so this is what we're funding next year, because some of it, I would assume, builds on what you've done previously. And then part of my follow-up question is, in the Clean Water Council and in Lasard-Sam's Heritage Council, is there a system of review for the projects after they're done to say, did they accomplish what we had hoped that they would? I don't know if Representative McNamara knows in Lasard, or if Representative Torkelson knows about the Clean Water Council, if there's that kind of end of the project review for cost effectiveness.
Do we have a volunteer? Representative Torkelson.
Clean Water Council does not deal with this issue on a project-by-project basis. So there is, while we certainly are reviewing the work of the various agencies that are involved with clean water spending on an ongoing basis, we do not fund individual projects or review individual projects necessarily.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Guineas.
Just for members and Representative Portman, one of the things that we passed last year in when we did the funding of the new money is we are setting up a major website where all the funds will have their proposals on the website. And, you know, we require defined outcomes and how you evaluate the outcomes. That's all to be on the website. So as outcomes come in, they're to go up on the website. So that is in process, but that is, we funded that, and it is in process.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I was glad to hear that, because that's one of the issues I wanted to discuss with you, is making this accessible to the public so that they can see where these dollars are going. So it says the project, how much was allocated, a description of the project itself.
Yeah.
And then also another piece that I think you might consider is when we're acquiring property in particular, I think it would be helpful to know how much the state paid for the property, and then also what the going rate is in that area surrounding the property. I think that would give us a better perspective on some things. I know we've had that conversation in private too, so I'm glad to hear that they're getting it up. I hope it gets up sooner rather than later.
I think that what you're saying is dead on. I would add that we should be doing mapping on the website also, and I think that's one of the intentions, so people can see locations as lots more information, because we have a younger generation that's used to that kind of information, which, members, leads us perfectly into our next thing on our agenda, which is outcomes.
Turn it back over to Representative Guineas.
We'll be doing for the next couple of meetings is doing exactly what Representative Anderson asked us to do and or asked about, and that is seeing how our money is being spent, and so the public can see exactly what it's getting for its money. Those are the hearings we are scheduling coming up, and before we go into budget cutting, we need to know exactly what we're getting, and if there are things we think we shouldn't be getting, then that's what we'll work on. So one of the things that we had asked about is some of the money we allocated last year for composting. So we will have reports on the overall budget and on specific projects too. So that's where we are. Welcome to the Pollution Control Agency. Okay. And members, as you are, we're nearing the end of our time. LCCMR took a little longer than I expected. And we are going to be hearing from the governor, so we're going to adjourn just a few minutes earlier than we would ordinarily adjourn. Keep all this information in your packet, because this is the beginning of a continued hearing, and we didn't intend to finish it today, so this is the beginning. So with that, welcome to the Pollution Control Agency.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is David Benke. I'm the Director of Prevention Assistance Division at the Pollution Control Agency. And what I wanted to provide you this morning was an update on our composting grant program. You won't find this presentation in your packet. I have sent it over to your committee administrator. But this is just a quick update that we'll provide. As you may recall, the legislature appropriated $500,000 for source-separated composting grants last year. That would be set over 2 years in fiscal year 10 and 11 at $250,000 per year. Also in that legislation was a report that will come back in 2012 to talk a little bit about the results and advise on the continuation of the program. And so this update today is just to kind of let you know where we're at. Things are just getting started, and therefore we're not at the point where we're going to provide the outcomes and results, but we can talk a little bit about what we anticipate seeing. If you think about the purpose of the program, it was really to get organic material out of the waste stream, to try and find a diversion for that material, and to concentrate on the use of that material once composted, to encourage home composting, as well as school and public entity composting. If you take a look at the waste stream, there's still an opportunity for diversion of organics. We, you know, take a look at the waste stream and look and see about 30% of the waste stream is still organic material. About 25% of that is still recyclable material that we could have the opportunity to divert. Some of that would be considered high quality organic material, food waste, slightly contaminated paper, and some of that less high quality, more difficult to compost material, wax papers, wood waste, other things like that. But still, the opportunity for that diversion exists from disposal facilities. In September of this year, we provided a request for proposal in the state register to start this program out. We combined it with our environmental assistance grants to facilitate an easier process for us from an efficiency standpoint, and combine that with that and also some stormwater grants. So there was three areas that we announced in that RFP. We also took a look at promoting this composting grant according to statute and some places that we don't always promote solid waste activities in. If you think about our normal process, we would announce that in the state register, on our website, but in this case we looked at some other places to put it. We emailed interested parties list that we generally use at the agency. We worked with our normal solid waste partners through our internal and external lists. We also emailed the soil and water conservation districts. We used our SEEK website, which is our sharing environmental education knowledge, to announce that to teachers. We worked with our Next Step website, which is also folks involved in sustainable activities. We sent it out to the Minnesota Grocers Association. We contacted various folks after the announcement with the RFP in the state register through conferences and other activities we were already involved in. We also sent it out to our cities and counties involved in source reduction and recycling. So in total, I think we hit about 8,500 to 9,000 entities with this request. That's probably about 3,000 to 4,000 more than we normally would get out through the solid waste channels. When we announced this, we also included in the RFP and in the application the criteria for the composting program. We anticipate measurable outcomes in this, and so we wanted to make sure that in the application we saw what those were going to be, and also had an assessment of the likelihood for achieving those outcomes from our review panel. We also looked at the assets and resources available to the applicant to actually conduct and make sure the project could happen. We looked at the cost effectiveness, the use of innovative technologies, materials or methods, and the applicability and dissemination of the results to others in Minnesota, which we think is very important, particularly in a new program like this, where demonstration and sharing the results is going to be really important. Within the RFP, we looked at the experience and qualification. In this case, we included in the application the statutory criteria, the program criteria that we get to the end use of the compost, or we get to increase home composting, or increase in schools and public entity composting. The agency received 8 applications totaling $385,000 and some change in terms of requests for all areas of the program. The staff has recommended the funding of all of those. We did announce at the beginning of the RFP all the funding being available. We know it's over 2 years, and we'd look to fund those 8 projects over the 2-year period. That will leave some additional resources where we'll probably go out for a second RFP with the balance and target that. And looking at the results that we've got, if there are areas that we want to further target for work on this, is something that we'll take a look at in a further RFP. Take a look at the projects that we got, and I'll just run through them briefly without going into huge detail on it. The Dodge County Environmental Services Project was one where there's a continuation of both curbside and home composting efforts. For the Prairie Creek Community School, it was a combination of education and composting both within the school and within the community. For both the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District and Carver County, would be upgrades of existing facilities or moving existing facilities and the expansion of the commercial and residential co-collected organics programs that are already existing there. When we say commercial in this sense, it does include public entities. It's just a term, you know, as we look at how it's collected. These are large sources, schools, institutions that might be, and rather than residential collection, it's just called commercial collection in this sense. On the next slide, you can see some additional projects. The Crow Wing Soil and Water Conservation District project was a combination between the county and the Soil and Water Conservation District to both do education for on-site and also for collected organics composting. The next project on the list for the City of St. Cloud is actually a compost end-use project, where the bioretention projects that they've got going, rain gardens and other erosion control measures, would utilize compost in those projects and evaluate its use as an erosion control measure. The Northfield Schools project, Kids Who Care Compost, is both an education and a collection and composting project. The last project, one which we reviewed heavily, is actually a waste reduction project for organic material. Rather than collecting it and composting it, this is a study to look at the behaviors associated with generation of food waste and how we might reduce those so we don't have to worry about collecting the organic waste out of the waste stream, but actually having less to worry about to start with. Those are the projects we're currently under review with those. The agency hasn't released the funds on those composting grant programs. But the process is underway, and we're evaluating that. So that's an update for the where we're at with that, and we'll try and answer any questions that you might have.
Well, we do have a couple of questions, but I would note that two people that have lobbied me this year about waste incineration, Hennepin County and Pope Douglas, both said they didn't know anything about these composting grants. So I think it would be worthwhile to let them know what you're doing. That just is an FYI. And so you have a question, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is real short. It's my understanding that the check's not in the mail. It's on hold at the Office of Budget and Management or whoever holds our checks when they don't want to send them. Do you know the status of that?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, the current budget situation, I think, is making us look at all of our resources right now and what we might move forward. As we know more about what is available, we're going to act on the programs and getting things out as we can. This is a normal timeline for these grants with the September RFP, but I think the situation currently in terms of how we resolve the budget issue, I think, is one where we want to take a good look at what we do with resources so that we don't start something with our partners that we can't fulfill in terms of the financial obligation.
If I could follow up on that, remind me, was this general fund money or was this money from the solid waste tax?
Madam Chair, I'm Myrna Hawback, the Director of Operations. This money is actually base funding within the environmental fund and coming from it, but as agencies were directed by Minnesota Management and Budget, our plan to look at reductions was to include all funds. And so as we have looked not only at the general fund, both operations and grants, we were required to look at the environmental fund, operations, and grants.
And members, I think it's worthwhile reminding you that the environmental fund is not general fund money. It is the majority, I would say, is from the solid waste tax, but there are other, like hazardous waste fees, in here too. Who else has a question? Representative Clark?
Madam Chair, I just noticed the lack of investment or whatever applications being accepted from the metro area, from the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul. And I'm just curious about that. I know Eureka is in the area. That's waste reduction. But in terms of composting, I'm quite concerned about that. So if we could talk later, I'd like to know what the opportunities are there, because I can tell you there is a lot of work that is being done around gardening in Minneapolis and St. Paul that requires composting. And so I'm really wondering why we don't have an opportunity there.
I don't see any other questions. We will certainly be bringing up the issue of using this money in substitute for general fund money, because it's not to be substituted for general fund money. I don't see any other questions. Members, we will resume next week and looking at the statutory or the language of what are folks doing to make sure that citizens know what they're getting for their dollar. Representative Portman.
Madam Chair, there's a lot of color copies here, and we haven't gone over this stuff, so I'm assuming you want us to save these so we don't have to have these copies, color copies, remade.
Yes, please put them in there. Thank you so much for coming. With that, the meeting is adjourned.